The following sermon is a presentation of Christ Fellowship Church in Aurora, Illinois. Today's speaker is Pastor Gary Fraley.
This morning we're looking in the book of Ezra, and so if you would turn in your Bibles to Ezra chapter 2, that's where we'll be this morning as we look at it. In both Naperville and here, several have asked me, how do you go about digging stuff out of the scripture? And so I thought I would try to answer that with this message this morning. And the message will be kind of an illustration of how I go about it. The first thing I do with a passage is outline the text. And then the second thing is ask questions. But this morning we're going to do it all in one. So we're going to kind of go through and kind of find out what's there in the text. And, you just kind of read through it and it just kind of, you know, there's a whole bunch of names and a whole bunch of people. And it isn't very exciting. And you think, well, you know, what am I going to get out of this? And maybe we'll just go on and we'll just kind of brush by. And so we don't want to do that. And so it starts here in verse 1. And it says, now these are the people of the province who came up out of captivity of the exiles, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away to Babylon and returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each to his own city. And so so it's interesting that in that verse 1, it says that these are the people that took Cyrus up on it. He said, and all of you want to go back? Can. You don't have to, but if you want to, you can. And so so what we're going to have in this chapter, and relating it back to the context, we're going to have people that are going to decide to go up to Jerusalem. And each one is going to go to his own city. In other words, he's going to go back to where he came from. And that's interesting. Excuse me a minute. And then the second thing is in verse 2, and it says, these came with Zerubbabel, and then 10 other guys. And we won't struggle with their names this morning. We had Zerubbabel, and he seems to be the head. And we look at that, but we say, wait a minute. We remember back in verse 8 of chapter 1, the king had given the task of taking the people back to Sheshbazzar. And Sheshbazzar and Zerubbabel don't sound the same, and so we got a problem. Who are they? And it doesn't take very long to find out that they're the same guy. And Sheshbazzar is a Persian name, and Zerubbabel is a Jewish name of the same man. So we have that. And then there raises a question. Who are these ten? Why have they been singled out here and along with Zerubbabel? So we need to, that kind of perks our interest a little bit, so we ask that question. And then that verse ends, it says, the number of the men of the people of Israel. And here the Bible goes again, it's counting by men. And it was men that were coming out of Egypt, and now we got men going back. And so we asked ourselves the question, why does the Bible count by men? And what's this all about? So we'll try to find the answer for that as we go along. Then we come down to verses 3 through 35, and there's this long list of names and the number of people that came with them. And as we read down through the list, we notice in verse 7, it says the sons of Elam, 1,254. And then as you read on down in verse 31, it says the sons of Elam, 1,254. So we got the same name, the same number of people, and so we ask ourselves, what's going on here? And is it a duplicate? So there's a question. And then we come on down and we're just kind of observing and we're looking at the text. And verse 21, from verse 3 to 20, it says the sons of all everyone. And now we come down to 21 and it says the men of Bethlehem. So it switched. Verse 22, the men of. And then if you look on down, we come to verse 34. Verse 27, the men of, and verse 28, the men of. So four times it switched off of being the sons of to the men of. And there's these names there. And so right away, I didn't recognize those names. And so I wondered, Bethlehem is a town. And so I wonder, are they all towns? And these four verses are those towns that are being talked about that the people are going back to. So there's another question. And then we get to verse 36. And to 39, and here's a list of priests. I don't know if you mark your Bible. For me, I put a box around priest. This is a definite category of people in it. And then in verse 40, we have Levites. And so I put a box around Levites. And then we got down to 41, and we have singers. And so there, I thought it was just fascinating that they made a list of the singers separate, and I put a box around that. And then in 42 was the gatekeepers. There aren't any gates there, but they've identified people that used to have that job. And so the gatekeepers. And then we get down to 43, and it's a list of the temple servants. Now it's interesting. 43 to 54 is the list of the temple servants. So there's quite a list of them. And then we get down to 55 and to 58, and that's Solomon's servants. Now, Solomon lived on the earth a long time before this, several hundred years, and yet his servants still have the distinction that their family had served Solomon. I just think that is amazingly interesting. And there was 392 of them that could trace their lineage back to the fact that their family was Solomon's servants. And then in, excuse me, in 59 to 62, there was a group of people that wanted to come, but they couldn't prove their ancestry. And so because they couldn't prove that they were from there, they let them come. But in verse 63, it says that in the King James, it says Tirshatha. The Tirshatha was going to rule. The New American says the governor. And the governor said that they shouldn't be able to eat from the most holy things until the priest stood up with the Urim and the Thummim. And the governor was Zerubbabel. Okay, so he was the governor, so this was referring to him there. And then verse 64 and 5, it gives us the whole assembly. Oh, and in verse 63, when I got that far, I asked myself, I wonder if you added all these people up, how many that would be. I mean, they give all these people and the number of people that came with them, and you add that up, I wondered how much that would come out to. and verses 3 to 63. And then in 64, it says the whole assembly numbered 42,360. And so so the question is that the same number as we got when we totaled it up? And so we will want to find that out as we're looking at it. Then we get in 66 and 67, and that's their pack animals. And I don't know about you, but at first glance, that doesn't seem like very many pack animals for 42,000 families. And so so that is, that's interesting. And then they got there, and in verses 68 and 9, the heads of the father's household gave a free will offering, and so their offering was 61,000 gold drachmas. In the newer translations, Darius's, in the older ones. What is a Darius or a drachma? I don't know. So we're going to have to find out. And then there is 5,000 silver minas. Sounds like a minnow to me. And what are those? And so that's another one, what we're going to have to try to figure out. How much do they weigh, and how much are they worth at today's prices? And so that would be interesting. And then it says in verse 70, now the priests and Levites, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, the temple servants lived in their cities, and all Israel in their cities. And so it comes back to where it started out in verse 1. They got there and they lived in their cities. And I said, how far is it from Baghdad to Jerusalem? And so that's a question that we want to try to answer. And then, how long would it take to get from Baghdad to Jerusalem? That would be interesting. And then once you get there, you got to remember they hadn't lived there for 70 years. Maybe somebody else found their house and moved in. So what are you going to do about all that? And you know, you can go back to the same town, but we kind of have the presupposition that because Cyrus said you can go back, that they're going to go back and everything will be as it was 70 years ago. And I think the answer is not going to be there. And so some things are going to have to be worked out. All right, now, let's go back and point two. We've asked some questions. We've got us an outline. There's groups of people that are going back. And so our first question is, there was 10 guys named with Zerubbabel. It's interesting that, you know, if he's just taking a few Jews back, you don't need to have a whole lot of organization. But if you're taking 42,000 families, this is feeling bigger. And it's feeling like you're going to have some help. And I personally think that those 10 were the leaders of the groups that went back there. And they had a lot to do. And we'll see all that these leaders had to do to get this thing organized, to make it happen, and for them to go on the way. In fact, I don't know if they went in 10 groups or just how they organized it. But if they went in 10 groups, one of these men would be over each caravan. Like when you went on the Oregon Trail, there was a wagon master with every group of wagons. And that's kind of the picture that at least it sticks out in my mind. And we asked ourselves, why does the Bible count with men? And I think the answer to that is that men represent families. And so you can just say that when it counts by men, it's saying families. And as we saw when we were in Exodus, that increases the number of people a lot that went along. And we'll see more of that as we go along here. The next question we asked was verse 7 and verse 31. There's two Elims. Verse 7 says the sons of Elim. Verse 31 says the sons of the other Elim. Clearly, there's two Elims. There's Elim and then there's the other Elim. I cannot explain to you why the people going with them is the same number. I don't know. That's really a surprise that it would be exactly the same number with the two Elims. But clearly, there's two different men that were going. And then we came down and we were looking at the sons of, the sons of, the sons of, and then we got down to the men of. And we asked the question, are each of these towns? And the answer is yes, they are. Netophah is southeast of Bethlehem, and then Anathoth is north of the Mount of Olives up on the ridge, and then Michmash is on the ridge on further north, right at the junction where the road goes down to Jericho. So it's up on the ridge, and then there's Bethel and Ai, and they're on the road. It's like here's Jerusalem and then the Mount of Olives, and you get up on the ridge and you come to the first towns. And then when you come down off the mountain, at the base of the mountain, there's another main road that goes up, and Bethel and Ai are there. So they're all towns, and people are given for each of those towns. For verse 63, we saw that he's the governor, and the person that held that office was Zerubbabel. And the more you read through the chapter, you feel organization. The fact that you could list out the actual number, the people and the number of families and the categories and all, you feel organization all the way through this. So we get down to verse 63, and we asked ourselves how many men are listed here, and when you add it up, it comes to 29,829. So Okay, that's the number of men that are in that list that are there, and we came down through it. So, when we come to verse 64, 64 says, the whole assembly numbered 42,360. And so that is not the same number. And actually, with this number, we need to add 11 to that. So let me get it down here right. It's 29,829. Now, why did we add 11? We had to have Zerubbabel and those 10 other leaders in that, and that I didn't get added in there before. So if you put 42,360 and subtract that from that, you come up with 12,531 difference. Ugh. Now that is a problem, right? We got these number listed. We said this was the number. But who are these 12,000? And so I started working on that and actually worked on it for quite a while. Several of the authors I read said the Bible just made a mistake. Nah, we're not going there. It didn't make a mistake. And so before I would surrender to it made a mistake, I would just have to say, I'll figure that out some other day. You know, and we can't say that it's wrong. And so we're looking at it. And finally, I came across Kyle Dalich, some German commentators that I respect a lot. They're conservative in the way they look at it and very thorough in their research. And they said this, we're of the opinion that only those from Judah and Benjamin are in the list, while the total sum includes those from the other 10 tribes who also wanted to return. I said, you know what? That makes sense to me. The purpose in writing this is they're going back into the land of Judah to build the temple, and Nebuchadnezzar had also packed off some of the other tribes, and so some of them would have had the freedom. He didn't say only those from Judah. He said, those of you who are Jews want to go back. So I'm of the opinion, and I'm not ready to draw a line in the sand and die on it for that opinion, but I'm of the opinion that these 12,530 are just Jews that were from other parts of the country. Now, when we think about that, it goes on in verse 64, and when you start really paying attention to what it says here, it says the whole assembly was 42,360 besides, so we got to add, male and female singers who numbered 7,337, and they had 200 singing men and women. So the number is bigger than, the total number is bigger than the 42,360. By the time you get it all added up, it is 49,897. Okay, pretty close to 50,000. Now that's interesting. If you take that number and multiply it times 4, you come up with 199,588. Well, this is an arbitrary number, so let's just say that is around 200,000. Now, this little trip is getting more complicated. if we're just taking 20 people, I can see how that would be pretty easy. When you're taking 200,000 people, that becomes a little more of a challenge. And then in verses 66 and 67, it says when they got there, the heads of the families gave an offering. It gives their pack animals. And a surprisingly small number, as I said, of pack animals. If you add up the ones that they've given, that is 8,136 pack animals. Okay, now I got, you know, how much can a horse carry? And how much can a mule carry? And how much can a camel carry? And how much can a donkey carry? And there are numbers for those out there. And so I looked that all up, and the bottom line is that they can carry 440 tons. 440 tons. Now that seems like quite a bit when you think about it. But let's look at it this way. 20,000 people or let's say it this way, 50,000 families, if each family only took 100 pounds with them from Babylon or from Baghdad to Jerusalem, that would mean that everybody would have a 25-pound pack. Okay, now some of the little guys wouldn't carry 25 pounds, and some of the bigger guys and the dads would have more than 25 pounds. And but now, ladies, think about this. You're deciding whether you're going to go on this trip. Okay, and here's the deal. If everybody took 25 pounds, the weight they would take is 5 million pounds, or 2,500 tons of material. Our pack animals aren't going to do too well at getting all that stuff there. And so all of a sudden you go gulp. Let me just share. Well, no, I'll save that. I'll remember that one. So I think we can be pretty sure that they walked. And I think we can be pretty sure that each person on the trip carried something. How much the little ones carried, I don't know. But they carried something. And remember, this isn't just a camp out. You're going to stay there once you get to the other side. Okay? All of this has got to be going through the people's minds as they're deciding, how about our family? Can you hear the discussion at home? Honey, what do you think about this? Several times in our life, Loretta looked at me with disbelief when I came up with something I wanted to do. And she would look at me and she would say, "You do remember that we have daughters, you know." And you're talking about doing this with daughters, I can hear that in some of the discussions around the camp, around the home, as they're deciding whether they're going to go. All right, they got to Jerusalem, they gave the gift in verses 68 and 69. And Darius weighed a quarter of an ounce. And they gave 61,000 of those. And so that's 15,250 ounces they gave. And the reason that we're leaving it in ounces is important because gold is today $1,601 an ounce. So if you take that and you multiply that times the 15,250, you come up with almost $24.5 million where did they get all this money? They had to carry it over there, and then when they got there, they're willing to give it to the Lord. So $24 million, and that gold weighed almost half a ton. It was 0.48 of a ton. So almost half a ton of gold they gave to the work of the Lord. And then, how much is a mina? It's 1.25 pounds. And so they had 5,000 minas of silver times 1.25 pounds. And that means that they gave 3.25 tons of silver. 3.25 tons of silver. And silver is selling now at $31 an ounce. And when you bring it all into ounces, that makes it 100,000 ounces. So they gave $3,100,000 in that, or the total gift was $27.5 million to the work of the Lord. And plus gold platters, silver platters, gold bowls, and silver bowls, and 100 priest robes. Somehow they got all of that over there to the country. And then in verse 70, we ask, how far is it from Baghdad over to Jerusalem? And straight across is not too far, but the way they had to go, here's Baghdad, and they had to go up like this to Haran, and then down like this to Jerusalem. And that distance, when you add it up, is 1,009 miles. Okay, that's 1,009 miles. And so let's do a little more math. How long is this going to take? Well, if you walked at 2 miles an hour for 8 hours, that's 16 miles. So let's say that you decide that that's how much you're going to walk every day. 8 hours, 16 miles. And if you do that and divide that into 1,009 miles, it means 63 days on the road. Or if, because they're Jews, they're only going 6 days a week, that means it's going to take 10 weeks. Okay, it's 10 weeks or 63 days of travel on the road. And then when they got there, then they says they each went to their own city. If you took each one of these names and added them, put them with a city, they would end up with 41 cities all around Jerusalem, living there once they got there. Now, so far it's been pretty factual, and the next step, the first one is you outline it, and then you ask questions, and then you answer your questions. Then the third step is you try to visualize the passage. Now, close as I could come to visualizing it was a bicycle trip that my family and I took. For 7 years, we took our vacation on bicycles. Okay, no car. Bicycles. And everything that went on the bicycle trip went on the bicycle. Okay? This trip that I'm going to talk to you about was 780 miles. Okay? So that's not quite 1,000, but it's big enough that I can kind of feel that a little bit. Okay? It's like going from here to Denver. Okay? That's all we got to do. Go from here to Denver. Now, at that time, my girls were in high school, and that was one of the times I got to, do remember you have daughters when I'm talking about this. We took Amtrak up to Klamath Falls, Oregon, and we bicycled back to San Jose, California. So first thing, we had to determine how far we could ride in a day, and we determined we could do 60 miles in a day. And 60 miles divided into 750, it means we're going to be on the road 13 days. And that gives us a Sunday to worship and not be on the road. So that felt good. And then, okay, now when are we going to do this? What are the dates? What are the 2 weeks that we can dedicate to making the bicycle trip? Now, there's a lot of different ways you could do it. So what route are you going to take? They had that problem. What route are we going to take? How long are we going to be on the road? You know, I mean, same problems that we had, they had. And then you're only going 8 miles a day, so where are you going to camp at night? Water's pretty important. All the way up here, you're following the Euphrates, so you can get water pretty good, but you got to carry some. So what are you going to carry it in? Who's going to carry it? And all that goes with that. And then camping. You know, you have your bike, and on the bike, you have a bag that you hang on the back. It's called a pannier. And it really is not a good idea to put any more than 50 pounds in the panniers. To ride a loaded bike is really pretty good challenge. It upsets the balance, and you cannot get off and walk it up a hill because the pannier sticks out and you're walking it, it's into your legs all the time. So it's much easier to ride it the whole way. But what has to happen on our bicycle trip, Loretta and I had a tent. The girls had a tent. Everybody had a sleeping bag. Okay, and then you had to have a cook kit, and you had to have plates and eating utensils and cups, and then you needed an axe and a shovel, and so you get all that and you spread it out amongst everybody, and then it comes to clothes. We had some trouble on this one. My packing list called for wear a pair of everything and have another pair to change into. The ladies in my home thought that was way short on clothes. So I said, I don't care. You can take your hot curlers. You can do whatever you want. I don't care. You are carrying it on your bike, and it is not coming onto mine. Okay? So just do whatever you want, but we're going to be that way. Now, the other thing is, we thought about safety, being out on the road, you know, helmets. We had a fight over that one, too. Bicycle helmets are not cute. And so I went out and found some, and I said, now this one's really cute. It looks like a ladybug. I got the thumbs down on it, and anyway, there's a lot of stories we could tell about that. Or the other way is, Red and I thought about riding across America on a bicycle, and there's two ways to do that. You can get out and camp along the way and cook, or the other way to do it is with a heavy wallet, which means you're going to do it, eat at restaurants, and you're going to motel it all the way across. Now, I think the people, children of Israel, did it the heavy wallet kind of trip. Okay, but there were still things that they had to have. They couldn't carry, with us on our bike, we could carry one day's food. Okay? But they got a bunch of days, they got 63 days they got to have food for. So you're not going to carry all that, so you're going to buy it. Somebody, can you think of the logistics of this thing? I was over in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and the Southern Army came up through there. The Northern Army came down through there. The Southern Army came back up. And after the Southern Army came through the second time, there wasn't any food anywhere in the whole Fayetteville area. All the animals were gone. All the grain was gone. All the vegetables were gone. We're taking 200,000 people. You got to be some planning in this thing to make it happen. All right, so I'm starting to get into this. I can feel this thing. And so then I did some research on the Oregon Trail. And one of my wishes is that I wished I could have done that. The Oregon Trail is just about twice as far. It was 2,000 miles from Independence, Missouri to Independence, Oregon. And in looking that up, I found some fairly complete lists of what they took. And I was amazed to learn that for a family of four, it cost them $3,454 for food. Okay, for the Oregon Trail, it cost that much for food. Now, I also found something that was cute. Every family took along a milk cow. In the morning, they get up and milk the cow, set the bucket by the wagon and go have breakfast. And after breakfast, they take the cream off the top and put it in a butter churn, hang it on the side of the wagon, and the wagon's bumping around over things all day long. And you get there at night and you take out the butter. I thought that was really great. Creativeness in going along. So these families, they're going along, and it's half the distance. So in today's money, it would cost $1,727 per family for food. We got 50,000 families. That's $86 million for food. You know what? I'm beginning to understand why Cyrus said, if you're not going, give them some money to help them. Now, there's another fact I found out in studying the Oregon Trail. That one out of every four women on the trail was with child. Okay, we're going to go 1,000 miles. We get to walk. Honey, you up to it? You want to go? Little guys with child delivering the baby out there. A little more complex decision now, isn't it? You feel like that. Well, let me just say this. We're down to the application. After the decree, Cyrus said, you're free to go if you want to. And I am sure that there got to be a whole bunch of discussion about this. Family started talking about, do we want to go? And then, you know, what happens, you start comparing notes, you know, and somebody comes up with a map, and this is how it's going to go, and this is how far it is, and this is what it's going to take, and you start putting it together, and then you got to decide, do I want to go or stay? Now, the other thing that I just was overwhelmed with in studying this particular chapter, God had started a revival. He says, I want the temple in Jerusalem rebuilt, and I'm giving you the opportunity to be a part of the revival. To be a part of that, you got to go 1,009 miles. It's going to cost, you know, quite a bit of money. You're going to have to carry your stuff. There'll be some angst about once you leave the Euphrates and then you come down this way, where are we going to get water? Where are we going to get food? Are we going to be attacked? And all the other stuff that goes with it. How about our safety and the other things? And then you start looking at it and you think, no wonder they had 10 men helping Zerubbabel. You know, they had a lot to organize. First thing they had to find out if everybody's qualified to go. Do you have your paperwork that says that you're a Jew from this town? Some of them didn't have their paperwork, but everything had to be verified and it had to be written down. And each of these men, I'm thinking that each of these 10 men had a group that they were over and they were going over it. And then you got to get packed. Okay, you've only lived here 70 years. What are you going to take? What are you going to leave? What are you going to do with all the other stuff? I don't know about you, but I'm thinking that 3 months is going to be tight, getting ready to head out. Once he's given the direction, and so you get out, and of course you need the maps, and so then you get all done. I think that somewhere along the line, every family had to have this discussion. Honey, what stands out to you? Should we do it? Are you up to it? Or should we just stay here? I think those would be some really hard questions, wouldn't it? And it would certainly be safer just to stay. But like I said, God was starting a revival. And he was giving you the opportunity to be a part of that. And so, do you have the faith to say, yes, Lord? I don't know what it's going to bring, and I don't know for sure how it's going to work out, but I don't know how all that hits you. The way it hits me is that this chapter started out feeling kind of just a bunch of numbers, and it ended up making me think, there's some stuff here, some important stuff that we have to deal with even now with the decisions that we have to make. Father, thank you for including this section of Scripture for us. I've been in the ministry a long time, and I have to confess, I've never preached on Ezra before, and I'm amazed at the richness of what you have there for us. I pray that you will help us as families to walk in your spirit with courage, with purpose, to your honor and glory. In your name, amen.